Halborn let me know he needed privacy. A few days after I'd caught Born following me in the city, he shocked me with a formal announcement. He was moving out of my apartment. To tell me this, Born had made himself small and respectable, as he called it, almost human, except for too many eyes. But really, respectable meant he looked like a human undergoing some painful and sludgy transformation into a terrestrial octopus with four legs instead of tentacles. This is how he presented himself to ask a favor. Anyone else confronted with Favorborn would have run screaming. "Moving out, huh? That's something," I said, inane. My hands were shaking at the thought. My heart was up near my throat, everything in my head like a fluster of wings. Was he serious? He couldn't do it. I wouldn't let him do it. "Yes, Rachel," he said, releasing a smell like honeysuckle and sea salt, which was his way of pushing. "It was bound to happen." Really? Bound to happen? Because I truly had never thought it would happen. For all that I could see every branching tunnel of the balcony cliffs, when I shut my eyes, this future had been dark to me. Born existed in one particular place, existed at the heart of all the lines I had drawn here. I would raise him in my apartment, and we would live here together. And that was that. But all I said was, "Where are you moving out to?" "To another apartment in the balcony cliffs." "Why?" Such a naked word, looking at him. "I need my space," he said, and said it so adorably that I melted even in the midst of my panic. "I need privacy. I need to be private." "Do I make you feel like you don't have enough space?" "No," Born said. "I just want some of my own." "I promise I'll come visit. You can come over after I get settled, after it's all better in there." Which meant he must have chosen a real dump, requiring a lot of work, or that a Born-friendly apartment looked very different from mine, which hurt, too. I couldn't help but think he'd read a scene like this in a book and was acting out one of the roles. Perhaps the role I was playing had gone to someone in the book who shouted at him or told him no or led him into a long circular dead end of an argument about why he was wrong. But I couldn't be like that to Born. So many bad and not so bad thoughts, unworthy of either of us, castigating myself already, cursing how I didn't know how to be a good mother. How, of course, if I forbid him to go outside, if I offered up slights, I might not even recognize that he'd leave me. And also, wasn't this the natural progress of a child growing up so fast? To become an adult, to move out, to be on their own. But it wasn't the way in the city, where to hold fast, to be as one, was safer, even if I'd been filling him with the idea of a normal life, with commonplace ideas. "I have conditions," I said, after a pause. "There are rules. Break them, and you'll be living back with me again." As if that was such a bad thing, such a horrible thing, and me still not quite sure where this impulse, this urge for separation, had originated. Had it come from some outside source? I kept seeing the little fox, as if the fox were a question mark behind everything. "What are the rules?" Born asked. "You come visit me every day." "Of course I will." He seemed sad I'd thought he might not, or maybe I projected that onto him. "You don't go outside into the city unless I'm along with you. For now, that means you don't go outside. You can sneak out of your own apartment under the door all you want, but you do not leave the balcony cliffs. That's fine, Rachel, Bourne said. I will be busy decorating my apartment anyway. And you still help me around here whenever I need you. And Wick, too, now. It was inevitable that Wick and Bourne would exchange more than suspicious glances soon enough. Each knew the other existed. Each acted a role around the other. Someday soon they'd be formally introduced. I'd taken pains to only talk about Wick in positive ways while around Bourne, although I'd slipped up a couple of times. I can do that, Bourne said. Do we have an agreement? Yes, we have an agreement, I said, bending to Bourne's wording as if we had signed a treaty. A treaty that hurt my heart, but the great lurch within me, the thought I was losing him, had receded. He would be close by. He would still be with us. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Bourne became huge, spreading almost manta ray-like wings, and bore down on me to give me an enormous, all-enrapturing hug. And I withstood it, standing there, buffeted, and wondered why I was so sad. He was so strong now, even this well-meaning gesture would leave bruises. You need to get off me. But I clung to him a little longer. Bourne's new apartment was only a corridor and a corner away, and the first night it didn't even feel permanent, as Bourne dropped by to talk, mostly about the tragic lack of lizards in the balcony cliffs. Then we played a game from when he was younger, scant weeks ago. He was too old for it, but it served as a happy memory, something we shared now to show affection. Rachel. Rachel, what am I? The strobe of colors felt like a smile or a flash of relief. That's a tough one, Bourne. I don't know what you are. Am I a squirrel? I don't think so. Am I a fish? Definitely not. Am I a fox? Secretly raised as a common animal, but really a royal fox? Most royal of foxes, first among fox kind. I shook my head. No, not a fox. Again, Bourne was telling tales out of a children's book. I resolved to give Bourne some tomes on economics and politics in the morning, if I could find any. Maybe an airport thriller, except then I'd have to explain airport to him. Perhaps that was my subconscious revenge. If he wanted to be an adult, I'd make him become an adult all the way. Then am I a born? Yes, I said. You are a born. Oh, good, Bourne said, because that's the name you gave me. I couldn't tell if he was being sarcastic or not. And I'm a Rachel. No, you're not. You're a human being. Maybe I'm a ham bone connected to a finger bone, something my mother used to say. Does a ham bone have a finger bone? I can see all your bones, but I don't know what they mean. Biting my lip to suppress a kind of nervous giggle, I said, stop thinking for a while, Bourne. All that thinking can hurt your brain. Do you want to hurt your brain? I don't know, Bourne said. If I hurt my brain, will I get a bigger one? One that isn't in my fingertips? Too silly for me, so I quit on him, which meant it was time to move on to the part where Bourne used a newly formed arm to create the silhouette of an animal, and I tried to guess what it was. Then I would do the same with my human hands, so slab-like next to his adroit tentacles. For a long time, even though he didn't yet invite me over, I guess I thought he was still just play-acting, figuring out what it meant to be a person. And I still had the consolation that I was Bourne's confidant, that Wick was still the intruder who had to sneak up on Bourne and listen to him talk to imaginary lizards. That Wick might know more than me about Bourne was laughable.